Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Mediator. God is holy and cannot have fellowship with sinful men. But Jesus is both righteous man and holy God, and through him we have direct access to God.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
I'm a nerd,
but a smart nerd. This is Wretched Radio. That was the voice, albeit brief, of Dr. Greg Gifford, thrilled to pieces to announce a new resource produced by Fortis Institute, Life Without the Numb. We will be releasing a new episode every single week for free at fortisplus.org. I encourage you, please avail yourself of this free resource. There is also a free study guide. This is all courtesy of our gospel partners. Thank you very much. I don't know what that was like drunk Elvis, I think is what I just did right there. Thank you very much, gospel partners, because you allow us to give these resources away, which means we're reaching people around the globe. They can watch this all over the planet and they can get it for free, because so often in poorer places of the globe, it's just cost prohibitive. So thanks to our gospel partners, it's free no matter where you live. Please consider watching this if you or somebody you love has been given a label, a diagnostic label that identifies you as having some sort of malady as defined by the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. You will get clarity. Would like to share with you what the nerd had to say, because I'm telling you, we need this word. I don't know how many reports I've seen within the last couple of weeks. All of the proclamations, SSRIs are a problem. Wait a second. We've got issues. We don't know what's going on. We think that the side effects, it looks like getting off of these things is very painful and very difficult. So if you're on them, know somebody who is, or you're thinking about going on them, I encourage you, please, Life Without the Numb. Here's the nerd.
And I admit that. As a nerd, I sit down and I wonder about how things came about. When we talk about the secular therapeutic ruling the day and sometimes ruining the day, what exactly is happening? I'll admit, though, I'm not a huge history buff, but I think at times history actually is important to help put things in context. So I just want to share with you a brief history of the secular therapeutic. How did we get here? How did we get to a place where it's normal to take your sixth grade son to school, them evaluate him on a paper evaluation, and then diagnose him with a health condition? How did that become normal? Well, it is a recent start. In fact, you can trace it back to a man named Clifford Whittingham Beers. What Clifford Whittingham Beers did was start a revolution. And before I paint him as this kooky guy, I just want to share some of his biography and how he became such an influence for mental health, mental hygiene. He was born in Connecticut in 1876, a graduate of Yale. And upon his graduation, he went to work within finance. He was a collector of taxes in New Haven, even worked in New York City for a bit. What happened during his time in New York City is he began to have these significant personal issues. So much so that he thought it would be best to just go back home to Connecticut, take some time off, and begin to recoup. So he did. Quit his job, starts to go back home. And unfortunately for him, he's got to move back in with mom and dad. And mom is his caretaker for a bit. But he actually found his condition wasn't getting any better. And he felt more stressed, more anxious, more depressed. In his biography, A Mind That Found Itself, he describes how his health decreased to the point of just being flagrantly hopeless. He strategized how he could kill himself, but he was under the watch of his mom. So seriously, this is how bad it got for years. He thought, I have about 2 minutes between the time that mom cares for me on the third floor to when she goes back to the first floor where I can go jump out of the window. What an awful reality. Hopelessness does this in our lives. So he did. He got to the edge of the windowsill and got scared. And before he jumped to his death, he slips, grabs the window sill on his way down, ultimately ends up falling, breaking both of his legs. It was apparent, though, that he was trying to take his own life. At that time, if you were to break both of your legs, you would be hospitalized, but you would also be institutionalized. If you've heard that term, institutionalized, going to an insane asylum. Okay, now, you don't have to be a history expert going back to the late 1800s to think about insane asylums. It's really more of like a penitentiary where human rights are taken away. You're put into a straitjacket. You could be quote unquote committed without your own choice. That's what Beers was committed to. Because he had attempted to take his own life, he would be sent to varying asylums for about 3 years. In that time, what Beers describes is basically being a prisoner. It's almost impossible to prove that you are sane when everyone says you're crazy.
Tell me.
You're crazy. How do you prove you're not crazy? So you're just hiding it right now. You're just hiding it. Just give it time. Take your meds. Do what the doctor asks. Beers at times would get angry, belligerent, fighting the hospital staff. He describes being put in straitjackets and confined solitary treatment for hours and hours on end. He's not a criminal. He didn't break the law. And yet against his will, he's put in an asylum for 3 years. When he gets released, it's this new chapter for his life. You see, Beers, he committed himself to improving the rights of those that were in insane asylums. And he thought, this isn't, if you're not a criminal, you haven't attempted to hurt anybody, what I experienced, no one else should experience. And so he begins to collaborate and write and think through, how could this happen? In the book that he published, A Mind That Found Itself, he begins to make recommendations. How could we prevent this? You see, what Beers was seeing is that an insane asylum is like the ambulance at the bottom of a hill. If you're in an insane asylum already, it's almost too late. How can we put guardrails at the top of the hill and protect against someone being committed against their will to an insane asylum? Let me share with you some of his recommendations. They're fascinating. What is needed in order to reach the root of the problem of insanity is the establishing of so-called psychiatric or psychopathic hospitals in connection with our medical schools. Hospitals wherein nervous and mental diseases may be treated in the most scientific manner, not only for the benefit of the patients, but also for the benefit of physicians and students. Let me just highlight a couple of things that he said. Pre-Beers, there were not psychiatric hospitals. You may not be super familiar with them. Typically, they're called a behavioral health unit. Most of our hospitals have a behavioral health unit attached to it. And even to this day, if you attempted to take your own life, you would be put on something like a 72-hour hold in the BHU. Those of you that are law enforcement or you've worked with those that have attempted to take, that's at least a standard protocol. And then maybe you're released after that. Where did that come from? Beers had an influence in that. And he said, what Europe is already doing, North America, America in particular, is behind the power curve. We need to bring psychiatric hospitals here. Psychiatric hospitals. Have you ever looked up what the term psychiatric actually means or psychiatry actually means? Healer of the soul. Healer of the soul. We need to bring soul healers stateside. What's important to note is he says in his recommendation, let's bring psychiatric and psychopathic hospitals in connection to our medical schools. Okay, we're listening, Beers. What else do you got? Here's what they're going to do. They're going to study nervous and mental diseases, neurology and psychiatry. Oh, interesting. Is psychiatry a medical science? I'll tease this more out here in a second. Is psychiatry the same thing as a neurologist? Does psychiatry study your physiology, your body? Does it study something else? Beers' recommendation was that we begin to bring these schools in to help study what's going on with folks to prevent them from getting to the point of going to an insane asylum. So what happens? His idea catches on like wildfire. You may not know the name William James. He's the father of American psychology. When he read Beers' work, he said, this is amazing. I totally support and commend it to you. Look at, Google it, check it out. when Beers suggests this, it catches on like wildfire. What does Beers begin to do? Start institution after institution after institution. He would start at least three institutions: Mental Health America, which is still in existence today, the World Federation for Mental Health, the American Foundation for Mental Hygiene. From Beers' understanding, what we need are organizations and foundations to help teach this truth. Study the mind and mental diseases and study neurology. Beers used medical terminology to describe the mind. What happened in an instant when Beers got out of an asylum is his recommendations were medicalize, 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 treat, treat, hospitalize, hospitalize, hospitalize. And inadvertently, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. Inadvertently, he begins to treat the mind with medical terminology.
And therein lies the problem. Why? Because there's a distinction between the brain and the mind. Furthermore, we're talking soul care. And there is not a drug on the planet that deals with your soul. Life without the numb, the history, at least that's this particular episode. They're dropping every single week at fortisplus.org. Please, it's better than anything on Netflix. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. At Fortis Institute, we've assembled an incredible team of biblical voices who are equipping believers every day. Dr. John Kreutz, Dr. Adam Tyson, Dr. Greg Gifford, Libby Glosson, Pastor Brad Bigney, Dr. Andrew Walker, Jason Lyle, Tim Challies, and of course, our very own Todd Friel. And their work has been invaluable in equipping believers because that's our mission. And the beautiful part, when you join us and link arms with us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner, your faithful giving doesn't just sit there. It multiplies into campus evangelism and biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And speaking of equipping people, make sure you download Fortis Plus. It is completely free if you haven't downloaded it yet, and it is loaded with hundreds of hours of content, with new content added every single day. No cost, no catch, just solid biblical truth. Look, the fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership make it possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting fortisinstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually felt something without fear, without shame, without immediately wanting to numb it? If you're living on autopilot, you're not alone. Millions are told the same thing. It's just a chemical imbalance. Hey, take this, you'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're numb. Here's the truth the world doesn't tell you. Your emotions, they're not the enemy. But they also shouldn't be your master either. Dr. Greg Gifford gets that, and his new series, Life Without the Numb, is available right now at fortisplus.org. It's a free 10-week series that shows how God's word speaks into anxiety, depression, and emotional chaos, and it does so with clarity you've never heard before. New episodes every Monday, absolutely free at fortisplus.org. This isn't about ignoring struggles. It's about transformation from the inside out. Life Without the Numb. Watch at fortisplus.org. Stop surviving and start living. Let's be honest. You've earned your PhD in couch sitting. You know exactly which cushion has the perfect amount of give. You memorize where the remote lands when you toss it. You are a professional. Well, congratulations. Your expertise just became holy ground. Fortis Plus has officially arrived on your TV. That's right. Your sanctuary of relaxation is now an actual sanctuary. Stream biblical truth without moving a muscle, except maybe your thumb on the remote. Every single resource Fortis Plus produces is now available on that beautiful big screen you justified buying because, well, it was on sale, honey. From your phone to now on your Roku, Samsung, LG, Vizio, Apple TV. Basically, if it has a screen and an internet connection, Fortis Plus is there. It's free to download the app. It's free to stream all of our content, funded by gospel partners who believe your couch time should count for eternity. Go ahead, stay seated, but download Fortis Plus first, because your couch just got promoted.
Attributes of God. Psalm 115, verse 3 says that God does all that he pleases. God is sovereign over his whole creation. He has the right and the power to govern all things according to his will. Nothing occurs in your life that God, in his sovereignty, has not allowed. He is working all things for his glory and the good of those who love him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Who would you go to before Clifford Whittingham Beers?
Spoiler alert, your pastor. This is Wretched Radio. Greg Gifford, in his new release, Life Without the Numb, available for FREE, not in honey. It's at fortisplus.org to walk you through not just the history of psychology, psychiatry, SSRIs, mental health, which he is doing in this particular presentation, but he'll begin to unpack the distinction between the mind and the brain to help you navigate the choppy waters of SSRIs and psychiatric diagnoses that maybe you've received or a loved one has been labeled with. It will bring a clarity, and I'm thrilled to pieces to let you know it's absolutely free at fortisplus.org. We need to remember the history of mental health, because prior to experts like William Beers, we had pastors that took care of these issues. But somewhere along the way, pastors began to lose the authority to be the ones who took care of the soul.
Who'd you go to? Was there just no care for the soul until Beers showed up and then finally we had adequate help? Who would you go to? The jurisdiction of caring for the soul has historically been the pastor. Who would you go to? You would go to the person that was trained in God's word to help you with your soul issues. Who is the true helper, healer of the soul, pre-mental hygiene and mental health? It was our pastors. It was our pastors. That's why even the term biblical counseling is a term that's somewhat new, because biblical counseling has been around since maybe the 70s. But soul care is actually starting to trend now. In fact, some of you might even have soul care pastors at your church. You've seen soul care ministries. Where did those all come from? They came from this revitalization of an idea that it is the pastor's job to actually shepherd a soul. Grab your Bibles, open them up to Hebrews. I want you to see that a pastor is a shepherd, but a shepherd of what? You ever thought that through? I had the privilege of speaking at a pastor's conference about 3 weeks ago. And I said, guys, remember this. We have to oversee building projects. We have to ensure that the doors are open on a Sunday morning. But what do we actually pastor? What are you shepherding? You don't shepherd a building project. Look at Hebrews 13 with me. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for this will be of no advantage to you. What's a pastor oversee? Your soul. Your soul. That's the work of pastoral ministry. Maybe you've never thought about preaching that way, as shepherding my soul. Maybe you've never thought about counseling that way or one-on-one ministry and discipleship. What are you shepherding? Our soul. Who did you go to with soul issues, pre-mental health and mental hygiene? Your pastor. Why would I call psychiatry the wedding crasher? Because that's exactly what they've done. Now pastors can be tempted to do the opposite of what God's called them to do. You go to your pastor in a vulnerable moment and you need help with the shepherding of your soul. And they say, oh, hey, I have a business card for you. There's a therapist down the street. She might take your insurance. What a sad reality. Pastors, it is the job of us to oversee the soul. And the secular therapeutic isn't just offering bad alternatives. And it is. It is offering bad alternatives. I'll show you more. But it's actually in this jurisdictional battle for who is the real overseer of the soul. What should concern us is that there is a pocket of Christians that go to their therapist before they go to their pastor. And how do we think it's going to get better, guys? It should concern us that psychiatrists are inserting themselves as the healer of the soul, when in fact there is no verifiable proof that what they're doing is really helping in the end. It feels an awful lot like symptom-based diagnosing and symptom-based relief. No.
He kind of flew over that, but did you catch it? There is no empirical data to suggest that they are helping anyone. Snapping your wrist with a rubber band? Really?
True healing and change. What Clifford Whittingham Beers did was insert something that would forever change the way we thought about the soul. He would insert the medicalizing of the mind. What do we need to protect the insane? You see, I'm actually in favor of protecting those and human rights and having insane asylums with accountability. Of course, I'm not for a person being in prison against their will. Of course, all of those are things that Beers did bring about. But what Beers brought about was this conflation of medicalizing the mind. Before long, the mind and the brain are the same thing. In fact, the organizations that he started would go on to say that mental illnesses are brain diseases, illnesses of the brain. Wait a minute. Are we talking about the mind or are we talking about the organ of the brain? Are we talking about the thing I can touch inside of my cranium, which is my brain? Or am I talking about the immaterial mind, the way that the scripture talks about it? You see, Beers ushers in the medicalizing of the mind. And then over time, what has happened is we haven't differentiated between the mind and the brain. We've treated them like they're the same. So why do you take psychotropics? I don't know. It's just kind of fixing something in there. There's a chemical imbalance and it's balancing it in some way. And we haven't paused to say, wait a minute. What is the mind? Can it be treated medically? Are you talking about the brain? We're talking about dementia and Alzheimer's here, a traumatic brain injury, or are we talking about the mind? You see, the next place that we have to go is to be able to say, the Bible has clarity on who we are as people. You are not a mind that is combined with a brain. There is a difference between the mind and the brain. And that's where we will go in our next lecture.
Which you can also watch for free at fortisplus.org. Did I mention it's free? Greg Gifford, Life Without the Numb. There will be many of them that get released. 10?
10.
Yeah, the 10 of them will get released over the course of time. And you can use it in Sunday school if you want to. Just the print out as many study guides as you want. This is a needed word in our day. I'm also looking forward to the Christian TV networks that are going to carry this. We really do need to take turf back. Soul Care, Richard Baxter's book on soul care. You would be, we read through some of it years and years ago. It might be worth toting out again. When you listen to this dead Puritan talk about what ails you, you'd be like, how does he know these things? And the answer is he was simply using the Bible to diagnose what was going on, the cause for these emotions. And then he was applying a biblical solution. And just because it's necessary to throw in the caveat, yes, there can be some extreme cases where medication can perhaps be beneficial, at least for a season, so that the person can begin to address their mind. But if all we do is medicate the brain, we're never dealing with the right entity. These are not brain issues. These are mind issues. What's inside of you? And as Greg would unpack, and you can listen to that lecture when it comes out, there are times when there's interplay between the mind and the brain, but there's still a clear line that is drawn in the distinction that you are not your brain. You are your mind. You are your heart. You are your soul. That is the essence of you. And that's what needs tending. And the vehicle known as the brain can transport that information, but you're not seeking to fix the brain. You're seeking to address the mind, that history of mental institutions. Do you know what they call the insane asylums today? Because a courtesy of William Beers and courtesy of John F. Kennedy, if you remember Smile a Little While for Me, Rosemary, his sister was given a lobotomy and they just sought to put an end to what we would call, I guess, historically insane asylums, mental institutions. There were also abuses. There's no question about it. But what is the alternative today? What do we call those places today? And it's not, by the way, the wing of the hospital, because that is always short term. Typically, there are very few exceptions in most states to this rule. The institution that deals with mental illness, they're called prisons. because we simply wait for these people who are out in the streets to break a law, even a modest infraction, and we lock them up and they get their meds perhaps every day. But it's basically the prison that takes care of so many people who just need so much help. And I, when we were at KSU, a police officer was lamenting what he sees when he goes into these prisons and these people and the help that they need. I just think we need to do better as a society. We need to be a society of compassion that says, look, our brains, you know, our minds have issues too. I almost said brains. I did say brains. I got them confused. We got issues too, but we know enough that it's not good for you to be out on the street putting heroin needles between your toes. So we're going to take care of you, not lock you up. We're going to take care of you. And you ask the question, just like the officer did at KSU, can those people be helped with the Bible? You ever see somebody who's lost get saved? It's radical. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.